It is not the fault of electric vehicles.
You know, electric cars can do basically everything an internal combustion engine vehicle can also
do. Top up some power into your car. You just want to tap and go.
Rebuild the right way, and the right way is going electric so that we can fulfill our climate obligations.
Electric cars are not for me. Electric cars are not sustainable. The industry isn't ready. We don't have enough resources. Not everyone can afford to buy an electric vehicle. Shouldn't we simply limit the number of cars? You might have heard these comments already. After all, you might agree with them and wonder why you should ever switch to an electric vehicle. With this podcast, we want to address these questions from a user perspective and understand what electric mobility is really about. Join us through this journey. This podcast is produced by EuroCities with UserChi, an EU-funded project that supports the development of electromobility in Europe. It does so by designing and testing user-friendly charging solutions in 7 European cities. Transport is responsible for one-fourth of Europe's greenhouse emissions. It's also the main cause of air pollution-related death in our cities. In addition, passenger cars account for around 12% of the total EU emissions of carbon dioxide. They're also the largest source of nitrogen dioxide pollution. These hard facts alone make it pretty clear that if we want to make a change, we need to switch to less polluting, more sustainable modes of transport, such as cycling, walking, and public transport. By 2030, the sale of electric vehicles could contribute to up to 75% of emission reduction coming from new cars, which would be crucial to meeting our climate ambitions. In this podcast series, we will talk a lot about electric vehicles. So let's start with some definitions. An electric vehicle has an engine that's powered by electricity and draws its energy either from storage batteries or from an external source. Only battery-powered electric vehicles are fully electric, unlike plug-in hybrids and hybrid vehicles. Electric vehicles are considered clean because of their low emissions. On average, electric cars in Europe emit 3 times less CO2 than their equivalent petrol or diesel cars. They also release fewer toxic pollutants such as particles and carbon monoxide. Electric vehicles have actually been around for over a century, and believe it or not, the first electric car was built in the late 1880s. But the rise of combustion engines put a temporary stop to its development. So we had to wait until the early 2000s to witness the rapid growth of electric vehicle innovation and market development.
In recent years, the number and popularity of electric vehicles has increased dramatically.
In 2021, international sales of electric vehicles hit a new record, 6.6 million. Almost 10% of global car sales were electric in 2021, 4 times the market share compared to 2019. The expansion continues, and no doubt we'll see more and more electric vehicles on the road in the next years.
Is this an electric revolution? And if so, what prompted it?
Today, we invited two experts to shed light on electric mobility. Giulia Poliscanova, Senior Director for e-mobility at Transport and Environment in Brussels, and Thomas Newman, Policy Manager at the European Association for Electromobility.
Certainly, e-mobility is developing at a very rapid pace lately. Whether it's a revolution, that really depends on who you ask. So some would say that EVs have been around forever, basically. And if you look at the early 20th century, they were more common than internal combustion vehicles. And Avaria has been around since the 1970s and been pushing for this. And if you ask us, then this has been a long time coming because it has been the better technology in many respects all the time. But if you ask, let's say, a company that has built their entire business model around internal combustion, then it can seem quite revolutionary in the end. And as I said, there is certainly rapid change right now. And it could be in some way seen as a revolution. And the same goes, for example, from a user's perspective. Some aspects will stay the exact same. So, you know, electric cars can do basically everything an internal combustion engine vehicle can also do. But if we get it right, then a lot of things, well, some aspects will change in a quite revolutionary way. So, for example, you don't need to go to the gas station to get range back into your vehicle because you can recharge at home or at your workplace in many cases. Or, for example, EVs can store energy overnight like a battery and then feed it back into the grid and help stabilize the grid, which internal combustion engine vehicles can't do. So if we get the regulatory framework right, then in some aspects it can be quite revolutionary. So in terms of what prompted the e-revolution, as you call it, firstly, we have the necessity to decarbonize the emissions from transport. So transport now is a quarter of all EU emissions, and we need to get to zero in 2050. So we need to do something about this 25% roughly. And of this roughly 25%, around 70% are road transport. So we need to do something about our roads. And e-mobility is a zero emissions option, or at least significantly cleaner even than on fossil energy. So that is the number one cause we need to move this way. And that being said, we've seen also advances in technology. So it has become much cheaper to produce batteries. They have increasing range. They've become just more convenient for consumers. We have seen new market players. I mean, Tesla is often named, disrupting the established business models coming into the market. And then we have, lastly, I think the catalyzer of COVID. Because we're now rebuilding basically from scratch. A lot of industries have collapsed. We're kind of at the bottom. And now we're putting a lot of money into the recovery. And we now have the chance to get it right. And there is a lot of drive in the policy environment as well, I think, to rebuild the right way. And the right way is going electric so that we can fulfill our climate obligations.
In Europe, from 2020, we now have standards for car makers that have to reduce their CO2 emissions from cars. And as a result, they had to produce and sell electric cars across Europe. And it's this availability of electric cars that prompted the revolution. So at the moment, the key pillars of European strategy is to really focus first on the supply of electric vehicles, so making sure there is offer for European consumers. This is really where the car CO2 standards come in, and they regulate the car industry. And also, on top of supply, to focus on the so-called enabling factors. So most importantly, infrastructure. So there are now both regulations on public charging all across Europe, as well as private charging via the Buildings Directive to ensure sufficient charging. And beyond that, also, as another enabling factor, to focus on ensuring there are enough batteries and these are sustainably produced. So this is really the strategy from European side.
Electric vehicles are indeed part of the solution if we want to replace polluting combustion engines and usher in a new era of zero-emission mobility. That's why there is a strong political and public push for going electric. But what's in it for drivers, and more generally, for citizens?
The number one perk, or one of the number one perks, is the CO2 emission savings, because electric vehicles have no tailpipe emissions. So they can be true zero emission vehicles if they run especially on 100% renewable electricity, then they can basically be operated CO2 neutral. And even if they're not run on 100% renewable electricity, electric drivetrains are very, very energy efficient. That's often underestimated in public debate because we hear this argument of, well, if the energy isn't renewable, then, you know, why go electric? Because we're using dirty energy. Mm-hmm. But the point is we're using less energy. And so in the end, we need less energy overall and also less of the dirty energy. And we can basically do more with the limited amount of clean energy that we have. So therefore, the CO2 emission savings are a very, very important part. And then there are perks for also, for example, human health. So there is no noise pollution. There is no air pollution, which is one of the number one causes of environmental deaths in Europe. So cities become quieter, cleaner, healthier. And then from the user friendliness perspective as well, EVs don't need to be maintained as much because they have less components that can break. There's no need for refueling at gas stations. I already mentioned that you can charge at home, so it's user-friendly. It's quite fun to drive them because they have instant acceleration, so if you're a bit of a petrol head, you can also have fun with them. So yeah, all of these are the advantages of going electric. The second part is, I think we need to start dispelling myths and we need a better understanding of e-mobility. It's still quite new. And for example, people tend to think of electric cars as an equivalent to internal combustion cars. So this idea of I need to go somewhere to refuel, I need to go to the gas station or to the fast charger. People don't understand that this is an expensive and very inconvenient option once you have an EV. And that the best way is to just charge whenever you park your car, to plug it in, have a slow charger at work or at home, and just wait. And when you get back in your car, it's 100%. And you really only need fast charging when you travel long distances, or if you really don't have an opportunity to charge slow. So this understanding needs to grow. And again, that will happen as it becomes the norm. People will start to understand how e-mobility works.
So in the end, it does look like many people may want to drive an electric car, but may not necessarily be able to do so because of hurdles such as money issues, the lack of charging stations, or the inability to pay for the charging sessions. Even driving long distance can be difficult with an electric vehicle.
Our two experts give us an insight into the main challenges that drivers are facing and some of the solutions that are currently being explored.
If I live in the Netherlands and I want to go to Germany, I might need five different cards, as they're called RFID cards or different chips, to be able to connect to the different networks. So we need much more interoperable, much more connected networks. As well as that, we also need to have easy payment, and it also goes with that. So the reality is, beyond the niche market of a few people who are maybe comfortable with apps, actually most people today are used to just tapping their card. You go to a supermarket, you buy a chocolate, tap and you go. Why can't you do the same? As you kind of top up some power into your car, you just want to tap and go. You don't want to give your data. Maybe you don't have internet connection. So it's really important to ensure this easy payments as well. So that's really important. Now, beyond that, I would mention two more things. One, we are moving to the situation where more and more people who buy electric cars not necessarily have their own garage or their own house. So having solutions for this shared communal charging is really important. It's about having the right rules for things like Sandic, for example, in Belgium, where you don't have to wait for 1 year for the permission to install the charger. It's about having really good public charging infrastructure in cities, but also outside cities, so charging hubs. So it's easy for people to just, on their daily commute to a supermarket, charge and go, even if they don't have their own charger. And last but not least, but I would mention this, the reality is that most people in Europe, when they buy a new car, they buy it as a company car. Actually, more than 50% of cars, new cars sold in Europe, are sold to fleets or people as salary cars. So workplace charging is paramount. So having incentives for people, for employees and for building owners to easily install chargers at work, so people can charge in the day, since they got a work car, will really help. And actually, it's really important for cities as well, because the more of these chargers we have, the less you need to take precious space in a city on roads for dedicated chargers.
So the challenges for users, well, there are a few. To a degree, I would say charging infrastructure could be a challenge or could be a bottleneck. Many users cannot charge at home, and we have currently enough infrastructure, at least in elite markets, to sustain the fleet. And a lot of this will happen on a market basis anyway. So this challenge is often inflated, and people are saying if we don't have the infrastructure, we can't have the cars. We decidedly do not see it that way, because basically as the cars come, there will be a market to also deploy more infrastructure, and that will basically go hand in hand. And also with the AFIR, we now have this policy guarantee that the charging infrastructure will follow the cars. But what we need, for example, is a certain basic coverage along motorways. Again, this is a distance-based target of the Commission to make sure people can drive all over Europe and recharge on the way. We need to make sure that people that, for example, don't have their own driveway can charge, for example, in a shared garage or on the street. Right to plug from the EPBD is a big piece of the puzzle there. So charging, it's a challenge, but it's often overblown. A second challenge that we still have is, to a degree, upfront cost, because they're more expensive to buy. EVs are cheaper to run over the lifetime already, and they will be cheaper to buy. Most studies I've seen are 26, 27, so 5 years from now, if those predictions are right. But for the time being, there might be some need for support, also to maybe make it easier for many users that can't buy first-hand to second-hand vehicles. So that is definitely a challenge for the moment. And then the value chain. So we need to make sure that we have, you know, a built-up value chain in Europe, for example, for batteries, that we keep materials in the loop via recycling. All of that is a new industry. It needs to be built and it needs to be supported. The same goes also, for example, for skills. We need to make sure that as we transition to electric mobility, that the workforce is reskilled so that the new jobs that are created can be filled with maybe by the people that are losing jobs in the established value chain. So retraining, making sure that there's a match between old jobs and new jobs, that will be definitely a challenge.
Today, the market for electric vehicles might still appear new and full of challenges, but in the next coming years, what could it look like?
More broadly, what I see is that manufacturers, you know, the industry is producing and is selling more and more electric vehicles. And especially we're really going towards battery electric vehicles. So in more in Europe, we will really see higher range, more efficient battery electric vehicles. We today do have quite a lot of kind of, we call them fake electric, but plug-in hybrid vehicles. They create more problems, more emissions problems in cities than they solve. But what we see because of regulations, especially something that happened just last week in early July, to tighten the emission standards, how emissions are calculated for plug-in hybrids, I believe we will see less and less plug-in hybrids, which is good news. Speaking especially about cities, I think there the challenges are twofold. One is the size of vehicles. It is not the fault of electric vehicles. I want to really stress this. It's the fault of the overall market of diesel and petrol cars going towards SUVs, bigger and larger cars. And as a result, people want to also buy bigger and larger electric vehicles. So having incentives, and this is really where local policy, taxation comes in, to incentivize rightly sized vehicles. Maybe someone does need, with five kids, a bigger car. But most of us, we don't need an SUV to transport ourselves. So rightly sized vehicles is one challenge. And the other challenge in cities I see, and what we really need to see more, is less reliance on private personal transport, personal kind of vehicles, and much more shared solutions. I still believe they should be electric because that's how you get them zero emission, right? So an electric bus, an electric taxi, an electric Uber, but going away from everyone having their own car towards shared solutions in cities is another, I think it's a future trend. I think it's happening, but I think from the perspective of cities and livability in cities, it should happen a lot faster than today. So there is a specific challenge in cities with the fact that there is a lack of space for everyone to have a dedicated charger. This is why shared charging solutions are even more important in a city than anywhere else across the country. What do I mean by that? I mean things like charging hubs where you can have a taxi, a private car and an electric delivery van all charging together, you know, different charge points or charge kind of the charge spots. That's one. Another one is to have more shared thinking about the communal charging in the high-rise buildings, the multi-apartments to flats and things like that. And last but not least, commercial property. So charging, having semi-public charging in places like supermarkets, gyms, hotels, which is open to the public, can really help alleviate the need to have all these private charges in a city.
And finally, because this podcast is about users, who uses electric vehicles? Some surveys tell us that most electric car owners are men who drive almost every day in and out of the city. Today, however, the electric market is rapidly evolving and now includes different groups of people. For this podcast, we met with different users. The first one is Julian from Brandenburg in Germany. He's been an avid electric car user from the get-go. Julian and his family started driving an electric vehicle in 2007 and have since tried different models. They currently own two electric cars.
Since last year, we really enjoy driving a Volkswagen ID.3. Which is great for our family. And we also have a Skoda Citigo EiV. It's a small car, like the, it's just like the Volkswagen e-Up. And I think the Citigo is even better than the ID3 because it's small, it's very powerful, and it has long range, and it's a very low consumption. We choose to go to electric cars soon after installing our first solar power plant on a roof on a house, which was very small. The first one, it was only 1.27 kilowatt peak. It's very small, but back then it was very expensive. But we realized soon after installing that the amount of energy that we produced was a great amount, and we chose to use this not only for the household, but only for driving. Back then we had natural gas heating system for our house. Nowadays we have a heat pump, but back then there was the idea for use this energy for driving, and it worked very well. Today we use our cars for all kinds of driving, from here to there, going to work, going shopping, going to friends, and everything what you can think of. And also we often go to the Baltic Sea, which is around 300 kilometers from Berlin, because our daughter lives there. And nowadays, traveling long distances, which was kind of an adventure back then, is nowadays it's a piece of cake. We have several fast charging opportunities on the way, but with the ID3 we can do it in one turn. It's no problem, and recharge the car when we are there, so that's no problem anymore. I think that the advantages of electric cars, it's very simple. They're smooth, they're stress, it's absolutely stressless driving, but it's also powerful. And we can use our own clean energy from our roof in summer. Our solar power plant now is bigger. Then we put more solar cells on the roof now, and so we can use a lot of energy which we produce ourselves. And in winter we can use green energy from the net, because here in Brandenburg we have almost 100% clean energy in the net, so we can drive almost round the year with absolutely clean energy, and that's really great. We didn't have to change any of our habits using electric cars. It's just comparing the old cars, the first electric cars, with the cars today, is that the old cars didn't have that long range, so we had to charge them more often, in winter every day, in summer every two or every third day. But with the cars we have today, they have ranges from 250 to 350 kilometers. We can charge once a week or just plug it in when the sun is shining, and that's the best option. When we meet friends and we talk about electric cars, which we do a lot of years now, I just say, come on, take a ride, look at yourselves, how it works. And even my brother, which is a real, in German we call it petrol head, he always said electric cars that are toys and that's not really cars. Now he gets his own electric car in the next days, and he's looking forward driving electric. And that's great. So just invite people, have them a ride, and almost or most often they are convinced in seconds driving electric cars.
After this first episode, we hope that you have a better grasp of what all the fuss is about and that you know a bit more about electric mobility.
E-vehicles are part of the solution if we want to move more sustainably, but there are challenges lying ahead, and we'll explore them in the next episodes.
Next month, we will look into how much owning and charging an electric car would cost you. See you next time!